We have an intensely personal look now at the Syrian city of Homs. It's in the news. Negotiators are trying to arrange delivery of humanitarian aid.
Residents have suffered years of house-to-house combat. Entire neighborhoods are wrecked on this battlefield of Syria's civil war.
That ruined city looks different in the memory of Urwa Nairubia.
Homs, my hometown, is like, you know, everybody asks, where does the rainbow start? Where does the jokes? And where's the spring of jokes? The spring of jokes is Homs. It's just that.
When he grew up there, it was a vibrant city swept by the winds of the Mediterranean.
And in its streets, Urwa Nairubia began producing a documentary film called Return to Homs.
You know, when we started making the film, it was all very peaceful, and none of us had in our imagination the idea that this might turn into a war.
That was 2011, when his cameras captured Homs amid the optimism of the Arab Spring.
All kinds of demonstrations were all made of songs, dancing. Everybody was just revolting in the most pleasant way, and it was so fun.
Pleasant. Fun. Urwa Nairubia talks of protesters who were accused of carrying weapons. In response, they mockingly marched around pointing okra, or cucumbers, like guns. Only later did they realize cucumbers were not enough. The camera in this film comes to focus on two young protesters. One is a soccer player named Basit. The other is an activist named Osama. Both wanted peaceful change.
They believed in that. Basit used to defend and sing for pacifism. But then after the death of two of his brothers and many of his family and the destruction of his family's home, after many painful experiences, he ended up choosing to carry on arms.
The movie follows the rebels through narrow streets, crowded rooms, and claustrophobic tunnels. And this distant city in the news becomes overwhelmingly present on screen. You see Basit leading other protesters in singing.
He addresses the soldiers of the Syrian army, telling them that they should not be killing their own people and that it's not their job to be following orders blindly, and that they should have hearts. And that unfortunately didn't work, but the song became quite important, and everybody in other cities started to sing it in demonstrations and so on. Then later on, he became a little more like songs about courage and fighting. Combat kind of songs, like what he was living.
Basit's appearance changes during the film. The way that he physically looks different, it's almost as if he's aging before our eyes, even though not really that much time has passed.
No, in the beginning of the film, he's 19 years old. In the end of the film, he is less than 22. So he is very young. He's so much, too much, actually. Many Syrians have really lived, I don't know, 10 years in the past 2 years. It's bewildering. But there is also the question of nutrition. What kind of food is he finding? And so you can see that he starts up like with a very fit body. I mean, he's obviously an athlete. He's very strong. Then gradually he's getting much thinner. But he has the heart and the spirit. You will see in the film that he's always very sad. Something happens. He's on the verge of a serious depression. Next morning, he wakes up and there's a new energy. He's singing and laughing again. And this has been happening for a long time. Now he is still under siege with many others.
There's an amazing scene that maybe illustrates what it's like to be in this besieged area. And there are rebels in two different blown-up buildings, separated by some street or open area, and one man is shouting to the guy in the other building, "Do you have some tobacco?" And he shouts back, "Maybe hashish." But it appears to me that they can't cross to each other, right? You could be shot if you went out on the street.
This is a wide street where the guys are stuck on the other side and want to cross, but they cannot because it's really very well observed by regime observers with night vision, with day vision, all kinds of vision. So they could not, and that's why they dig a tunnel under the street to get back. So they joke about hashish and they joke about tobacco because they don't have anything, basically.
I know there are several people who were involved in putting together this documentary. You were involved at the beginning, right?
I'm always involved as the producer of the film, but I was involved in the first half of the shooting as the cinematographer. I did the camera work. And then when it started to be really almost impossible to get to Basset and Osama and the guys, a wonderful activist who works in the film, also who appears in the film, Kahtan, became our main cinematographer. He never studied film. He's not professional, but I believe he did a job that is amazing, outstanding, because he was there with the guys, with Basset, so the camera doesn't have any distance anymore. It's just part of the event.
There's a shot that I'm sure I'll remember for a long, long time, about an hour and 5 minutes in, and it's rebels trying to cross one of these open areas where the Syrian government can fire at them, and they run across one after another, and finally one of them is hit, and it looks as if he's been hit by a linebacker on a football field. He tumbles over. Was this the cameraman you trained?
The guy hit with a bullet was Kahtan's cousin. So you can see in the film that his camera for the first time is stumbling in his hands, like it's falling from his hand, and he's shouting, "That's my cousin, that's my cousin." It's an understatement to say that such kind of cinematographic work is brave. It's much more than that. And it's led by an amazing amount of faith in the importance of film, in the importance of passing this image or this vision to the rest of the world.
What do you think about when you read the news of the peace negotiations going on now?
I think I'm very hopeful. I'm just waiting to see what will happen. We're also scared of a minor, small giveaways will be given. Just like, for example, getting a few food parcels into the siege, or saying we can get only the sick women out. These kind of partial solutions will lead into them staying in the same situation, but will allow the world, the international community and the media to celebrate some progress. But to them, it's not progress. It's just only a partial giveaway.
As we are talking, there is a debate over a United Nations effort to get aid into homes. And you are warning that even if that finally succeeds, that we might draw the wrong message from that.
Definitely, it's a necessity to get aid into homes. But on the other hand, this is not a solution. This is a kind of bluff at the expense of these people. So this is what's feared of in homes.
You have a scene in which Basset, one of the main characters, is pointing from a destroyed building, from high in a destroyed building across the street, and saying, "That's the house where I grew up in," and it's just a completely wrecked street. This is a city where you grew up. And after you left, there you are viewing one more passive film, one more passive video of part of the city destroyed, and then another part of the city destroyed. How did that affect you going through all that video?
It's very difficult. I was there also. I personally witnessed a lot of the destruction. It's always painful, but at the same time, young men like Basset and women like others there in Homs, still working, still with a beautiful spirit, they give you the answer to that question. You feel inspired, and you feel ashamed if you fall into depression. You feel that you cannot. Look at these guys. Look how beautiful they are, how energetic and how high their spirit is. You just believe that we can do better tomorrow morning and we can keep on pushing.
Arwa Nairabia, thank you very much.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you.
He's the producer of the documentary Return to Homs. It just won the World Cinema Documentary Grand Jury Prize at the Sundance Film Festival. Listeners to this program may recall NPR's Portrait of Homs from a few months ago. You can hear that story again coming up on NPR's Weekend Edition Sunday. This is NPR News.